Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities, and not the normal theme song to our show at all. we were at the BC Bisexual Conference dance last night, and we left our 3-4 different versions of Gloria Gaynor all at the dance.
Oh, boy.
So we just thought we'd arbitrarily decide on a new theme song, so that was Ani DeFranco and In Her Out, which is, incidentally, a song about bisexuality. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I'm Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard.
And the phone number for the show here is 822-2487.
And our email address is queerfm@portal.ca.
And the webpage is www.portal.ca/tildequeerfm. And we're experimenting with something a little different on the show tonight. The entire Queer FM show today is going to be a submission to the BC Human Rights Commission.
That's right.
And we'll have Barb Finley on the show in a few minutes to give us a little background as to why. But we're also being helped by at least 4 in-studio guests. It's quite amazing, actually. For once, we've got so many people in here, we don't even have enough microphones to go around. But anyway, you guys have all, a lot of you have been here before. Introduce yourselves.
Well, hi, Heather and Craig. My name is Sandra Laframboise, High Risk Project Society Executive Director. And we're an AIDS service organization dealing with transvestites and transsexuals more on the streets. And who says transgendered people are not bisexual?
did we imply that they weren't? I'm sorry.
Good point. Good point, though.
And I'm Deborah Brady. I'm a co-founder of High Risk Project and co-author, one of the writers for the brief called Finding Our Place, Transgender Law Reform Project.
Excellent.
And I'm Julian Young, and I'm part of the working group that was advising the Human Rights Commission, and I'm a therapist here in Vancouver.
Fabulous.
And my name is Raven, and I'm a transsexual native, and I've done many things, but I'm not at liberty to say what they are.
Ooh. Fabulous. And we're going to be joined on the phone by all sorts of people as well. We've got, as I said, Barb Finley, who is She was legal counsel for the Transgender Law Reform Project. Is that correct?
She was the law advisor, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And she'll sort of give us the legal background on the issue. And also her partner, Sheila, will hopefully be joining us on the phone as well. Sheila sort of has some firsthand experience in what we're talking about today, which is gender, because Sheila is what you might classify as a butch lesbian and faces discrimination based on transgressing the proper female gender role.
Yeah, that's right.
Ooh, the identity look.
Yep, that's it.
You got it. And then Pam Burge, former broadcaster in Vancouver, and I guess, to be fair, current broadcaster in Vancouver, and her friend Marty, one of the founders of PACE, they did a little thing for us that they pre-recorded at Harry's earlier today, and I don't know, and I think Kevin from the FTM group is going to maybe join us for a little bit, so we got all sorts of people.
Yep, and we'll be placing a few phone calls around town to different people and asking their opinions as well.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
And of course, you can state your opinion and talk about, you know, your experience or just state your support for the amendments to the BC Human Rights Act, which is what we are talking about here, by calling 822-2487. So please do join us on the air, and we're going to take a break and come back with Queer News and talk to Barbara Finley, and but first, here's Cissa Picari on CITR. CITR 101.9 FM and Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities. And Kayan Beno from Cissa Picari, a Bolivian and Ecuadorian band. We have so few microphones happening tonight, or actually we don't have any fewer microphones than we usually do. What we have is way more people than we usually do in the control room. And so I'm having to keep remembering to switch you on. And then when Julian talks, I have to remember to switch Julian on because you're both you're both on the same line.
Oh, wow.
See?
That's a party line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Whoops.
What was that?
Okay.
Okay, hang on. I know what happened there.
There we go.
There
How
we go.
Doing?
Barbara, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay, good. There we go.
Anyways, I was going to say, I love that piece.
Yeah, we should get the formalities out of the way first. This is Queer FM for the lesbian, gay, bi, and trans communities, and I'm Heather.
And I'm Craig Maynard.
And the phone number is 822-2487, and we do hope you're going to join us tonight.
You bet. And our email address is queerfm@portal.ca.
And the webpage is www.portal.ca/tildequeerfm. There we go. And we're doing something kind of different on the show today. This show is going to be a submission to the BC Human Rights Commission. So technically, we're not supposed to make mistakes because the Human Rights Commission is going to be listening to this. But anyway, we've got Barbara Finley on the phone, who is a lawyer with Dell Finley Connors and Evans, and you were the legal advisor on the Transgender Law Reform Project.
That's right.
And we sort of thought we'd bring you on the air to set up the discussion today in terms of why it is that we are having a program on gender to submit to the BC Human Rights Commission.
Well, most people in Canada are protected against discrimination by legislation in the Human Rights Code of their jurisdiction, their province, or the federal government. That's not too true for transgender people, and transgender people include people who are cross-dressers or drag kings or drag queens or transsexuals, and it also includes people who are none of those but who run into trouble and discrimination because of how they look in the world. So the High Risk Project got money from the Law Foundation to figure out what would make the most sense in terms of making a protection for transgender people in BC's Human Rights Code. And the Human Rights Commission is now having hearings around the province about whether to add protections for transgender people as well as a number of other protections which are currently missing from the legislation. Mm-hmm. So there are hearings in about a dozen different communities, and creative ways of making voices heard like this radio program. And at the end of it all, Mary Wu Sims, who is the lesbian of color who heads the Human Rights Commission, will make her recommendations to the Attorney General. Then from there it goes to the legislature for consideration and to change the law.
Mm-hmm. So now, I mean, maybe Sandra, you might want to answer this, is when you did do this survey of people to determine what did make the most sense in offering human rights protection, what exactly did you come up with in the Law Reform Project?
Well, first of all, I want to backtrack a little bit and talk about the process of how the paper came about, the law brief called Finding Our Place, Transgender Law Reform Project. Yes, the High Risk Project did apply for the funding for that, but from the very onset of it, it was a community process, and we invited the community to participate through various means by bringing in writing submissions to the advisory committee that was set up of transgendered people, and to the writers of the brief and to the researcher of the brief as well. There was a whole bunch of people involved, and that went on for quite a while, where we met regularly and revise and advise and wrote and rewrote and edit and re-edit, and which Barbara Finley was involved from all the way through to even promoting the brief and human rights issues to advising the Attorney General. So the community process has been involved from the very, very beginning. And High Risk Project Society's role in there was just to funnel the funds and to ensure that there was a community process. We brought our voice from the portion of the community that we serve. High Risk Project Society serves the HIV positive, street involved, sex trade worker, transgendered portion of our community. And there's certainly a broader diversity in the transgender community, and all those voices must be recognized here. So in doing that, when we put forward the recommendation to the Human Rights Commissioner, we talk about holding hearings into the situation of the transgendered people in order that they can understand fully the dimension of discrimination. We also put forward a recommendation to create a public education campaign on the issue of discrimination against transgendered people. And we also put forward that the legislature amend the Human Rights Act to prohibit discrimination on the basis of gender identity, mm-hmm. which Barbara just talked a bit earlier about what gender identity meant.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, when we wrote this brief, it was brought It was sent to government bodies, to libraries across the country, and different activist groups around the country and the province, and people took that brief on and really promoted the brief and the RAND, because it was the first cohesive paper that was ever written on transgender and discrimination and medical services in this province, and I'll even premise in the country, because we've had a lot of good comments from other people from other parts of the country. And what happened from there, it just took off on its own. And the Attorney General, through some advocacy from different MLAs, invited a community process to advise the Attorney General and the Human Rights Commissioner on how to deal with this issue into the proposed human rights hearings that were coming forward. So I think that was really a beautiful community effort that happened here.
Fabulous. Now, coming back to you, Barbara, and we have your partner, Sheila, on the phone, too. Sheila, hi.
Hi there.
You actually also experience this kind of gender discrimination in your own life, as I understand it. So maybe you could sort of talk a little bit about your own experience in this area.
Well, at this point, I guess I'd say in my life, it's mostly about being hassled, being asked to leave washrooms or drawing that kind of "what are you, a freak" kind of fire when you've had an altercation or any kind of miss with somebody about something entirely else. That's the one. That's the thing they go for. It doesn't matter what the original disagreement was about. But certainly in my life, there have been times when I have felt very menaced and very threatened. And I suppose in the concrete, one time in Toronto, I was absolutely and categorically refused to be even allowed to apply for welfare unless I went to the facility that was for single men.
And this is just because you are occasionally perceived as a man?
Well, I'm actually more than occasionally perceived as a man. I'd say I'm pretty chronically perceived to be a man. It's just that most of the time it doesn't matter, and most of the time I don't waste a whole lot of energy correcting people. Mm-hmm. If I don't need to, though at different times in my life I feel different about that too.
Mm-hmm.
So some days I feel more in your face than other days.
Mm-hmm.
In a washroom, I mean, and a few times I have used a men's washroom. And I always felt really scared, like, what if I get caught? But of course, nobody blinks an eye at me. Nothing like what happens when I go to the women's washroom. So, I mean, in terms of what I want the law to do, like, I don't know, because I haven't really... thought about it, though I accept that certainly in the eyes of the world, yeah, I am perceived as a man. I mean, what I want is for attitudes and for more of a continuum, certainly, to be recognized in terms of appearance, in terms of what kind of protections I would want specifically from the law. Well, you know, to not be humiliated and harassed by people, but I think whatever they do with the law, I'm probably still going to be harassed by people in washrooms and insulted, and certainly attempts will be made to humiliate me. I mean, I think that I get better at not letting them humiliate me, and I have good role models, which helps a lot, you know.
But I guess perhaps it's fair to say that if the government takes a leadership role in enacting human rights protection, at least they're sending a message.
Well, yeah,
about
because
the
I
inappropriateness
think
of this.
Exactly.
What you experience.
Exactly. And so it can only, if people stop and think about a lot of things, it can only, in some future point, you know, change the kind of collective consciousness about who's what and how angry you have to be if someone has tricked you into making that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of hostility, as I'm sure the people in the studio with you right now know, and it's kind of, it's such huge hostility at times from people.
Mm-hmm.
Must just scare the shit out of them.
Yeah, and Heather, I'd like to underscore something that Sandra was saying, because BC is the first and only jurisdiction where protection is likely to happen, and that's because of the efforts of the people in the transgender communities, and I'm sure you're going to want to talk to them about how that happens and what their experiences are.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Barbara and Sheila, thanks so much.
Thanks so
for
much.
For starting out the show for us.
Well, thank you, Heather. Thank you for letting me throw my two bits worth in there.
Well,
appreciate it.
It was our pleasure, and thank you very much for doing it.
Okay.
And we will talk to you shortly. Thank you, Barbara, too.
Okay, we'll turn on the radio. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks, Barb.
I missed that. What did she say?
She said she's going to turn on the radio now, so...
I listened to the rest of it. Now, actually, I wanted to pick up on something that Sandy, you said a second ago when you said that the way this Human Rights Act Amendment is worded, it's offering protection based on gender identity. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, when we had the Attorney General on the show not long ago, he had sort of alluded to the fact that there had been some, you know, controversy or debate in the community about what the appropriate language was for this. And I know, Deborah, you had sort of had some thoughts on that as well.
Mm. Yes, and I agree, because the word transgendered is a community word that came about years ago, and not everybody right now is buying into the word transgendered. On an international level and on a national level, you can have consensus, but locally right now we're hashing that out still. We've came about to the word gender identity, because then everybody's included in that word gender identity. It's not just the transvestites or the transsexuals or the crossdressers or the drag queens and the transgenderists and the whole lexicon, but also the, as you heard Heather say a little bit earlier, the masculine-looking women who get discriminated against because of their perceived identity, as well as the effeminate male, you know. And I think one of the bonus with that, you know, if you look at a heterosexual male, for example, who's very effeminate, and there's a dress code at work, and one day this person walks in and contravenes the dress code or the look of what a male is supposed to be looking at work and gets fired and goes to the Human Rights Commissioner, he has no cause based on sex. But based on gender identity and the perception of his identity, then he would have a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things that we looked at and we've hashed out.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there was that case, I think, a couple of years ago that some of us remember in the media where Patrick Ovington, a high school student, and it was Port Alberni or mm-hmm. Port Hardy or somewhere, was his school tried to suspend him because he was wearing a skirt to school.
Well, you know, although they tried to, I would venture to say that they succeeded to it, because the kid left school, mm. felt intimidated, felt discriminated against, and felt ostracized and outed.
So
and
he actually did leave school?
Yes, mm. And those are the kind of things we want to address.
Okay.
We need to, we chose the term gender identity, I believe, because we need to protect people not only for who in fact you are, which is not readily apparent by looking at someone, but also based on who you're perceived to be. A lot of transgender people don't even know for sure, or it may take a number of years for a person to come to a conclusion that I am this or I am that. And it takes some years of assessment for doctors who are trying to assess people who want sex reassignment surgery to come to a conclusion that yes, you are a candidate, or no, you're not. And so we decided that as a point of law, if you're coming before a judge, if the judge has to decide if you deserve or come under the protection of a particular law, then it's really problematic, because here you have the person not knowing who they are, the doctors not knowing for sure who they are. Maybe at times appearing one way and at times appearing another way. So we need some inclusive term that includes everybody at all times. And the essential factor that unites all of these people is a behavior. And it's a behavior that goes against who you apparently were as a baby when you were first born. You get popped out of the womb and doctor looks what's between the legs and says it's a boy or a girl, or at least we'll make it into a boy or a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what you're stuck with for all of your life. Mm-hmm. And so we needed a term that could just include everybody that fits in that gender spectrum.
We also wanted to be sure to make it inclusive, because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the discussions that took place is, gee, what's going to be politically useful here? And there was some discussion about that, and then there was some discussion in the community about that. And we really felt strongly that the right thing to do was to go for rights for everybody, because everybody deserves them, and not what was going to be politically expedient.
So, I mean, maybe we can, this may sound a little 101-ish, but, you know, in terms of talking about why human rights protection is needed for transgendered people, I mean, maybe we can talk a bit about what kinds of things transgendered people experience and what kinds of things you guys have all had to endure in your own life.
Well, one of the things I'd like to say around that is, first of all, if we were truly a free country, we wouldn't need human rights protection. No. But unfortunately, human rights protection for me is another form of boxing and stereotyping and categorizing and putting people terms and putting people in prisons and saying you got to fit this or that. And we try to avoid that. But because we live in this context and we had to survive in this context, and I will call it survival for me, from my own life experience, we decided to go this road and use this system. For me in my life as a male-to-female transsexual under the umbrella of transgendered, and I come from the archaic years of 1970s, and I will say that, where there were practically not even any gay rights back then, or lesbian rights, or this rights, or that right, where the
they
boom
didn't even
years,
have
you know,
the Charter of Rights back then.
No kidding. I remember in 1974 walking on Parliament Hill with my little placard, you know, for gay rights. So coming from those years, in the context of growing up in those years and being socialized as a transgendered person, sex reassignment surgery was not a way out. It was not a thing you thought of, but you had to do it. You were either male or you were either female. Today, in the broader spectrum, there is a spectrum of gender, and the younger generation have a broader sense of choices. However, in terms for me, when you're talking about social programs, health services for the transgendered community, there is absolutely nothing that exists outside of BC. There's a lot of support groups that have come together. There's a lot of people investing their own money. But the government, our governments, our tax dollars is not being poured into social programs for transgendered people or into health services for transgendered people. And I think we're worthy of that. I think we're deserving of that, and certainly making a huge contribution into our healthcare services. It's moving. It's changing. Yes, there is a paradigm shift, but I think that these human rights protection will even help us, give us an avenue for enhance, help changing administrative policies, social policies, health policies eventually.
So it's a foundation to acknowledge that you have human rights, and therefore it's
yes.
a foundation to build on that basic right of equality so that you can say, okay, and this is what it means.
Exactly, exactly.
Let me give you an example of a really concrete situation. There's a fellow who was working for a company where they had lockers and showers at his workplace. And he had been living as a man for quite some time. He has a full beard. He, you know, this is not somebody you would mistake for female at all. And he had been working very happily there, you know, good reports, got along well with the other guys, no problems. Somebody outed him at work, and he went into the change area to find that his locker had been broken into, and his clothes had been urinated on by his coworkers. He's being constantly harassed, and his employer would do nothing to protect him. So this kind of legislation would protect that man against mm-hmm. that kind of discrimination. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for me, as a professional caregiver, one of the things that I've seen most often when we're talking for male to female, transsexual, in full transition, living as a woman, experienced life as a woman, but still having the quote-unquote male genitals and a male identity card, who identified the person, quote-unquote, within the system as male, being discriminated against. And when I address those issues behind closed doors with the medical officers and the medical staff that I worked with, then I was told that I was advocating too strongly and too emotionally for this cause, and that I should advocate for every client and the protection of the women. And I went, well, excuse me, but this is not very therapeutic, and we're setting up this individual for relapse to go out and so use and hurt themselves. So there's a lot of discrimination that happens within the system. It's systematic.
So was the implication in that particular instance that somehow you should be concerned about protecting women from somebody that was considered to be a man, so to speak?
Exactly. And one of the things that I do a lot in my workshops and educating people, and I have these questions coming up for professional caregiver, I said, for heaven's sakes, you know, we spend half our life trying to hide the parts that you're so afraid of us exposing. What makes you think that we would be exposing these parts? You know? So it's quite interesting, you know, that we would hide behind legality issues because we feel challenged by other people's issues or problems, or we become judgmental. Our own societal values, our own family values, a lot of times are challenged when we face transgendered individuals, you know, for whatever lifestyles they choose, you know. And those are the things that I've come across as a professional healthcare giver.
Mm-hmm. The discrimination that transgender people take face in their daily lives takes an incredible toll on people emotionally. It's what we're concerned with here is what it does to the individual, to the self-esteem and to the self-worth of a person in society, to walk into a corner store and not be acknowledged for who a person is, you know, and to be taunted. And that toll results in joblessness and poverty, such a diminished sense of self-worth that first thing you know, take it from there. We all know what happens to a person that has no self-esteem and no identity, that they're worth something, that they're a normal human being, that we have personhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me that there's a lot of recognition about what unemployment does to people who have been working steadily. There's all these studies that have been done to show that after a certain period of time, it's very difficult to then go out and look for a job. Mm-hmm. You know, your shelf life is considered 6 months or something like that. And yet there's no recognition that something so much more devastating than being barred from the workplace. Because how do you go and apply for a job, not only when you're feeling bad about yourself, but how do you go and apply for a job knowing that they're looking for a particular kind of person who looks a particular kind of way? And you know darn well you don't look like that. You're not even going to get yourself through the door. So there's a huge economic issue here as well. And there's also a large class issue that I think gets ignored a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very fortunate in that I have not experienced personally a lot of discrimination. I come from a very privileged background, and I recognize that. So I think we need to be very clear about the differences in discrimination that happen between different classes. And the class of folks that are the most discriminated against are the people on the street, and they're the people that keep on getting ignored over and over and over again. That society really never wants to look at any of those issues. They don't want to look at poverty issues. They don't want to look at drug issues. They certainly don't want to look at trans drug poverty issues. So this legislation is really, really important, because I think the way that we can judge our society is by how much we help each other out, how much we look to see that everybody is helped along the way, and how many people get left behind. I think that's a really good measuring stick of our humanness.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was the most exhilarating for me, taking that a little bit along, I just got out of a conference with the Minister of Health and the Pacific AIDS Network, and 4 years ago, I remember when I came around and promoting HIV/AIDS issues for transgendered people and all that, and I was squeamish at a podium and going, what about me? I'm the transgendered here. And today, sitting in a meeting 4 years later, there was a paradigm shift, and people from rural Kamloops says, well, you know, we got to include the transgendered in our terms of reference and in our definitions. And it was like, it's really exhilarating for me today to see the paradigm shift. And yes, we have to continue pushing. And yes, we have to put programs into place, employment programs. We have to put health programs into place, social programs, educational programs, housing programs into place.
Mm-hmm.
And start removing barriers for access to the things that everyone else takes for granted. You go into a school and you have to produce records of your schooling since 40 years ago, and you can't change some of those records. And so no matter what happens, you know, you have to disclose what's a confidential part of your medical record to go to school, for heaven's sake, to do a lot of other things in normal life. And these are things that everybody else just takes for granted. But there's no way that we can require people. In the past, it's been on a piecemeal basis. You know, you go for a police criminal record search. And, of course, you want to comply with the law and have them search under all the names that you've been known. But is it fair that that's disclosed to a potential employer that, yeah, we have a bunch of, we've done a male criminal record search and we've done a female criminal record search. So we need to have some uniformity in all these laws. Another area is marriage. There's some precedents in Canada that a woman married for some time to a man, and then there's trouble comes along in the marriage, and she applies to the same court that gave her the right to marry and the same court that gave her the right to change her birth certificate. She applies to that court for a division of assets, and that court, precedent has it that that court can say to her, well, you're not really a woman, so you have no right to the division of assets from this marriage.
Or just that as a transgendered person, you may have somehow, you know, contributed to the breakup of your marriage, or or you may have, you're subject to the prejudice of a judge who has probably never met a transgendered person before and, you know, doesn't really know how to treat them as a whole person and give them the same respect.
Well, I had an interesting story that happened to me, well, two actually, in the last 3 years, in terms of discriminating against being a transgendered person. And, you know, like for a long time, I had disassociated myself with the discrimination and felt really comfortable with who I am and built on that self-esteem coming from a background where I was and where I am now. But about 2 years ago, almost three now, the police were called to my premises because I was the subject of being abused by the person I was involved with. Simultaneously, that person called the police after he had assaulted me and told the police that I assaulted this man. So the police came and they see this woman, and I'm in the lobby of my building apartment with my manager, who knows nothing about me. And the police officers, of course, had my name, and then they received that phone call, and they come and talk to me. And then they say, okay, we're going to go talk to him. And they come back down and they say, well, what's your name? And I went, here's my identity cards. And I prove my identity and all that. And it says, what's your real name? And I went, oh, God. You know, and I went, no, this is a long time ago. This is my legal name. This is the recognized. Well, wasn't your alias Alfonso la 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 la? And I went, no. Right? And they've actually proceeded to ask me to lift my T-shirt and expose my right breast where there was a tattoo identifying me from my past.
Wow.
In the lobby. So I have a case against the Vancouver Police Department based on gender identity discrimination, which is still pending. I did complain to the chief of police, and there was an investigation with recommendation that the police officers get sensitivity training. Now, that was prior to the police having one of their own coming out being a transgendered person. So I'm sure that they've changed their position by now. But I thought that was quite interesting that that had happened to me, even after I had produced legal documents proving who I was.
I think you raise a really important point, which is that your gender had nothing to do with the assault charge. And so why they were going down that avenue at all is totally ridiculous. They shouldn't even have been there. I think there's an assumption, well, I know that there's an assumption from many people in different professions, healthcare professions, legal professions, that, and also, unfortunately, many employers, where somebody who is seen to be competent and able to do their job and rational and reliable, when it's discovered that they at one time were another sex, Suddenly they're irrational. Suddenly they're incompetent to do their job. Suddenly, their work records are not, you know, they're not performing up to scratch. And I think that people really do believe that somehow if you're transsexual, there's something wrong with your brain, that somehow you are mentally incompetent. It's, I don't know how they put that together, but that certainly seems to be what happens.
Yeah.
No, you actually, I wanted to pick up on something else you said, Sandy, which is that you have a human rights complaint pending against the Vancouver Police Department, which obviously was filed prior to there being a specific grounds of gender identity in the Act. Has there been a test case go through the BC Human Rights Commission where a transgendered person has filed a complaint based on some other grounds and actually had it heard and decided?
I couldn't really venture out on that one, except to tell you that from the Human Rights Commissioner's point of view, they're continuing to accept cases on the basis of sex or disability, but all cases are pending until after these hearings.
Mm-hmm. And of course, filing a complaint under sex or disability really does kind of force you to deny a part of who you are in the process of filing a complaint.
Mm-hmm. Or the choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can certainly empathize with someone going through transition and can find that very debilitating. But for me, and that opens up a whole can of worms, because gender dysphoria, identity disorders, quote unquote, is categorized as a mental health issue under the, and so therefore under disability benefits, you should be entitled to a whole slew of medical health services. But we won't go there with me tonight, because that's a week's worth of showtime.
But suffice to say, people should have the option not
exactly.
to have to classify themselves as disabled if they don't want to.
Exactly.
Is that probably
a fair,
equitable...
Especially in view of the BCCPD decision recently and this year, where there had been application that transgender be accepted under the term disability under their coalition of people of persons with disability. And that was put on hold because there was not consensus amongst our community about that issue. Mm. And so, yeah, it's an individual choice.
Mm. Okay. Oh, sorry, Julian.
I was just going to say that just to give a little bit of information about that, I agree that we shouldn't open it right up. But there are ramifications in terms of people accessing healthcare facilities. So if... depending on how you identify and you know, it's like how do you get surgery paid for? Is the government going to pay for it? Do you have to pay for it yourself? Is electrolysis going to be paid for? Are hormones going to be paid for? All of these kinds of issues get wrapped up in legal definitions, and this is another area that sets transgendered people or transsexual people apart from lots of other folks. Where when we're trying to get our lives together and become contributing members in society, we do need some help from the community to do that. That help being medical services in a lot of ways. However, there isn't really any other group that has to jump through the same legal hoops that we do in order to access healthcare services. So it's a funny little niche that we're in, because of course we all want access to services. And at the same time, we don't all necessarily want to call ourselves sick. So what do you do? It's very tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thought what we could do is maybe listen to some music for a few moments. And we've got people who want to join us by phone and participate in the conversation as well. So again, if you're one of those people, 822-2487 is the number to call. You can share your thoughts or your feelings, or just go on record as stating your support for this amendment. So 822-2487.